When you look at a traditional map of the world, there's this comforting expectation of, well, solid lines.
Right, yeah.
You see a border and you just think, okay, the conflict is over there and the peace is over here. It's clean.
It's categorized, yeah. But it's a very 20th century way of looking at the world, honestly.
Total.
We're heavily conditioned to think of global security as this like a physical geometry problem. You draw a line in the sand, you put troops on that line, and you maintain stability.
But then you actually look at the reality of global conflict today and you realize that map is, I mean, it's completely outdated.
Oh yeah,
Those
completely.
solid lines aren't just blurring, they're pixelating. The front lines are moving into the sky, into our social media feeds, and into the very algorithms that shape what we see.
Yeah, and the institutions built to navigate that map are, well, they're suddenly finding themselves in completely uncharted territory.
Right, trying to figure out how to keep the peace when the weapons aren't just bullets anymore, but manipulated data and commercial drones.
It's the absolute definition of a paradigm shift. I mean, we're looking at a landscape where the traditional tools of diplomacy are being tested by entirely new dimensions of
It's like
warfare.
catching everyone off guard.
Exactly. The speed of this shift is catching a lot of legacy institutions totally off guard.
And that is exactly what we are getting into today. Welcome to a very special, highly specific deep dive. For you listening, we're going to be exploring some intense, incredibly current intelligence to figure out how the nature of conflict is changing.
It's some fascinating material, really.
It is. Now, as part of our mission briefing today, I have to officially lay out our primary source material. So this is the AIS-PIA International Weekly Report No. 13 from the 2330 March 2026. Their email is direction@asp.fr, and you can find their web pages at www.asp.fr and www.asp-parry-western-europe.eu. Thank you.
And a quick note on that.
All right, I should also mention there's an upcoming international meeting in Geneva scheduled for the 1st through the 4th of June 2026, so you can direct inquiries to that email for more info.
Right. And it's an incredibly critical time frame to be analyzing. I mean, the last week of March 2026 gives us this profound, almost microscopic cross-section of where global stability currently stands.
Yeah, and the friction points that are emerging everywhere.
Exactly.
It really does. So, alongside that AISP report, our mission is to unpack a major stack of sources you've shared with us. We're looking at recent UN Security Council reports, progress updates from the UN's Action for Peacekeeping Plus, or A4P Plus initiative.
Yep, and the Georgetown Institute forecasts.
Right, the 2026 conflict forecast for the Georgetown Institute for Women, Peace and Security. We want to understand how the very nature of global conflict and how we actually try to keep the peace is shifting right beneath our feet. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
Starting with the physical reality on the ground. Because before we get to the high-tech algorithmic warfare, the human cost is still, sadly, tragically real.
That is a crucial starting point because, for all the talk of digital battlefields, the reports from this specific week in March paint a very sobering picture of the physical attrition happening on the front lines.
To the people actually wearing the blue helmets.
Yes, to the actual peacekeepers.
So let's look at the Levant, specifically Lebanon. The reports detail a lethal escalation happening there. On March 29th, 2026, an Indonesian peacekeeper serving with UNIFIL, which, just to clarify for everyone, is the United Nations interim force in Lebanon, was tragically killed.
And another critically injured.
Right, and this was caused by a projectile that exploded near their position by the southern Lebanese village of Achit al-Qusair, right in the crossfire of the active hostilities between Israel and Hezbollah.
And we have to recognize that this isn't an isolated incident of someone just getting caught in the crossfire. The A4P Plus progress report highlights a very concerning broader trend here.
A trend of what? Intentional targeting.
Yeah, a growing direct threat of malicious acts deliberately targeting peacekeepers. For instance, the data points back to the end of 2025, December 13th, to be exact, in Kadugli, Sudan.
Okay.
A drone attack there killed six Bangladeshi peacekeepers serving with the UNISFA mission and seriously injured nine others.
Wait, a drone attack?
Yeah.
So we aren't just talking about a stray artillery shell.
No, not at all.
That changes the entire calculus of what it means to put on a blue helmet. You're no longer just monitoring a demilitarized zone, you're an active target being hunted from the sky.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, we have to look at the deeply fractured multilateral environment these missions are operating in.
What do you mean by fractured?
Well, geopolitical tensions at the very top, like within the Security Council itself, are weakening the political consensus that these missions historically rely on to maintain their authority.
Oh, I see.
Add to that severe budgetary constraints and a massive liquidity crisis within the UN Secretariat. And perhaps most critically, you have host governments increasingly calling for the rapid drawdown and total exit of these missions from their countries.
Okay, I have to push back on that for a second. We are talking about the United Nations. They are backed by the wealthiest nations on planet Earth.
True,
But how can they possibly be facing a liquidity crisis when they have thousands of personnel deployed in active, highly dangerous war zones?
Well, it comes down to member states actually paying their assessed dues on time and in full, which increasingly they don't.
Seriously.
Yeah, the UN doesn't have its own independent tax base or standing army. It is entirely reliant on the political will and the checkbooks of its member states. When geopolitical tensions rise, as they have significantly in recent years, funding gets delayed or withheld as a political bargaining chip.
Wow, so they are literally running out of cash to pay the people who are currently getting shot at.
Essentially, yes.
It's like being a team of global first responders showing up to a massive fire, only to find the neighborhood actively debating whether to cut their water supply.
That is a tragically accurate analogy. And when your forces are taking casualties from indirect artillery fire in Lebanon or targeted drone strikes in Sudan, the mission has to divert massive amounts of its shrinking budget and energy just toward force protection.
Which means they can't do their actual job.
Right. It severely limits their actual mandate, which is to protect civilians or oversee peace agreements. The physical job of peacekeeping has arguably never been more dangerous or less supported.
Which brings us to a massive pivot point in our sources. Because this threat to peacekeepers isn't just a lack of resources, and it isn't just traditional artillery.
No, it's a fundamental shift in the weapons themselves.
Exactly. Here's where it gets really interesting. Let's move from Lebanon and Sudan to the Democratic Republic of the Congo and look at the UN's stabilization mission there, known as MONUSCO.
Yeah.
This is one of the largest peacekeeping operations in the world, right?
Yes, historically it has been massive. And the situation in the DRC right now provides a textbook example of how 21st century technological evolution is colliding with 20th century peacekeeping models.
Because during this exact week we are analyzing, on March 26th, there was a Security Council briefing by Viviane Van de Peyre.
The Deputy Special Representative for MONUSCO, yes.
Right, and she highlighted an alarming gap between diplomatic talks and the grim reality on the ground in the North Kivu region. Like, you had leaders meeting in Washington in mid-March to talk peace, but on the ground, the reality is entirely different.
Because the tactical reality on the ground has evolved drastically. The reports note that rebel groups operating in the region, specifically the M23 and the Alliance Fleuve Congo, or AFC, are now utilizing highly sophisticated tactics.
Stuff that used to be the exclusive domain of state militaries.
Exactly. We're talking about the use of offensive commercial drones, advanced GPS jamming, and signal spoofing.
Let's break that down because I think people hear jamming and just think of a radio playing static. GPS jamming and signal spoofing. How does that actually work, and why is it so crippling for a peacekeeping force?
Think about how a modern peacekeeping force operates. It relies on secure communications and precise location data for logistics, patrols, and medical evacuations.
Right.
Jamming is essentially shouting so loudly on a specific radio frequency that nobody else can hear anything. It blinds the peacekeepers. But spoofing is much more insidious.
How so?
Well, spoofing isn't just blocking the signal, it's counterfeiting it. A rebel group with relatively cheap, commercially available tech can feed fake satellite data to UN vehicles.
Oh, wow.
So a convoy commander looks at their dashboard map and thinks they're driving down a safe, cleared route, but the spoofed signal is actually driving them 10 miles off course, directly into a planned ambush.
That is terrifying. You can't even trust your own dashboard. And what makes this so precarious is that MONUSCO is currently undergoing a mandated downsizing.
Right.
The reports mention South Africa is slated to withdraw its troops by the end of 2026.
Precisely. You have a shrinking, underfunded force facing non-state actors who are equipped with incredibly cheap, highly effective electronic warfare capabilities. The cost of a commercial drone or a GPS spoofer is a fraction of what it costs the UN to deploy an armored personnel carrier.
The economic asymmetry of modern conflict heavily favors the disruptor.
Always.
But according to the sources, the technology goes even deeper than drones and jammers. The reports dive into this new domain of what they are calling cognitive warfare.
This is perhaps the most complex evolution outlined in our stack of intelligence. Cognitive warfare isn't about destroying physical infrastructure or hacking a computer network. It's about hacking the human information environment.
The weaponization of perception. So if I'm a rebel commander in the DRC, or anywhere else for that matter, why would I risk my own troops and resources attacking a heavily fortified UN base when I could just use a laptop to achieve the exact same result?
That is the exact strategic calculation being made right now. The intelligence reports detail how AI-generated content, deepfakes, and manipulated satellite imagery are being actively weaponized.
Just to spread chaos.
Well, they're using these tools to manipulate public opinion, spread tailored disinformation, and specifically to incite local violence against UN personnel.
You know, we always think of warfare as territorial, taking a hill, moving troops across a border. But if a manipulated viral video can incite a massive local mob to blockade a UN supply route, the information environment isn't just a PR problem. It is an active battle space.
It is becoming the primary battleground. In traditional warfare, if you want to force a peacekeeping mission to retreat, you have to outgun them militarily. In cognitive warfare, you just have to destroy their legitimacy in the eyes of the local population.
Which is way cheaper.
Oh, much cheaper. If AI-generated deepfakes successfully convince a community that the peacekeepers are actually the ones causing the violence or hoarding supplies, the mission becomes completely untenable. They have no local cooperation. They're essentially defeated without a single bullet being fired.
And is the UN trying to adapt to this?
They are trying, yes. The A4P Plus report mentions new digital tools, like a platform called UniteWave, to monitor and analyze the information environment. But they are a slow-moving bureaucracy fighting against agile algorithms specifically designed to maximize human outrage.
Right. And as warfare evolves into these digital asymmetrical spaces, the impact on civilian populations is intensifying in some really horrific ways. Which brings us to a major milestone mentioned in the sources.
The WPS anniversary.
Yes, we are marking the 25th anniversary of the Women, Peace, and Security Agenda, or WPS.
The WPS agenda was a landmark UN resolution. For the first time, it formally recognized that conflict impacts women in fundamentally different ways than men, and established that women must be central to any peace-building process.
But as the Georgetown Institute's 2026 conflict forecast makes painfully clear, the vectors of harm have evolved dramatically over the last 2.5 decades.
Unfortunately, yes.
The GIWPS report highlights some incredibly disturbing cross-national trends. One of the most prevalent is the weaponization of hunger. And I want to be clear about what that means. It's not just that food is scarce because of a war.
No, it's a deliberate tactic.
Right. Armed groups are intentionally destroying agricultural infrastructure and cutting off supply lines to starve populations into submission. And because women globally are so often the primary caregivers and the ones responsible for securing food for their families, they bear the absolute brunt of this tactic.
It is a devastatingly effective way to break the resilience of a community. The report also highlights how political transitions and coups are shrinking civic space globally. And that digital repression we just talked about, like deepfakes and coordinated online harassment, is being used surgically to silence women leaders, journalists, and peace activists.
And we see this playing out across very different geopolitical contexts in the reports. Now, before we detail these specific findings, I need to make something explicitly clear to you listening. We are pulling directly from the Georgetown Institute's reports, which include some highly politically charged assessments regarding ongoing conflicts in Mali and Ukraine.
Right.
We are not endorsing the viewpoints of this content or taking any sides here whatsoever. We are simply conveying the ideas and findings contained in the original source material we've been given to analyze today.
Having established that context, the reports document severe challenges in Mali. The sources state that extremist groups like JNIM, which is an Al-Qaeda affiliate, alongside Russian Africa Corps mercenaries who are supporting the Malian government, are expanding their territorial control.
Okay.
And the reports claim that alongside this expansion, there are widespread accounts of severe sexual violence being used systematically against women and girls.
And the sources document another facet of this in Ukraine. The reports state that Russian attacks targeting energy, transport, and social infrastructure, combined with high civilian casualties in frontline areas, are disproportionately affecting women.
And the UN is also estimating a massive scale of sexual assault occurring in occupied territories.
Yeah, the through line the researchers are drawing in both these distinct conflicts is that women's bodies and the infrastructure they rely on for daily survival are being treated as secondary battlefields.
What's fascinating here is the sheer duality of the situation for women in conflict zones today, and the sources make a point to highlight this. On one hand, you have women being disproportionately targeted by these evolving vectors of conflict,
whether it's AI-generated harassment online or the intentional starvation tactics offline.
Exactly. But on the other hand, the sources also make sure to highlight institutional progress and resilience. It's not just a completely dark picture of victimhood.
No, not at all. The A4P Plus Progress Report notes that allegations of sexual exploitation and abuse by peacekeepers themselves actually decreased in 2025.
Which is a very important metric.
Yeah. And since 2012, UN Women and Justice Rapid Response have deployed over 200 specific experts. We're talking legal specialists and forensic experts to investigate gender-based crimes internationally.
Plus, as of this report, 32% of senior peacekeeping leadership positions are held by women.
Right.
The data continually reinforces that women remain the most crucial, effective actors in local humanitarian response and actual, sustainable peace building. When women are involved in peace negotiations, those agreements last significantly longer.
So the 2026 landscape shows that protecting women and elevating them into leadership isn't just some moral imperative to feel good about. It's a hard strategic necessity for any lasting global stability.
100%.
So with all these intersecting massive crises, we're talking cheap commercial drones taking out UN convoys in the Congo, AI cognitive warfare hacking the information space, the systemic targeting of women, and a UN struggling to even fund itself. How is the highest level of global governance actually responding to this new reality? Let's look at the top-down response from the UN Security Council.
The Security Council schedule for this specific week in March 2026 is incredibly telling regarding their priorities.
Yeah, the United States held the rotating presidency for the month, and the signature events they chose to schedule show a very clear, urgent institutional pivot.
The contrast between the old world and the new world is stark here. The council had a massive meeting on the theme of energy, critical minerals, and security.
Right.
They held another one focused on children, technology, and education in conflict, which the sources note was chaired by First Lady Melania Trump. They are explicitly pulling these modern, tech-driven elements right into the very center of the international peace and security agenda.
And they absolutely have to, right?
Yeah.
The Security Council is recognizing that you cannot meaningfully discuss peace in 2026 without discussing the supply chains of the 21st century.
Exactly. Who controls the critical minerals required for advanced technology like drone batteries or AI servers? How is digital technology completely reshaping the psychological experience of children growing up in war zones?
I just can't help but picture the intense irony of a room full of diplomats in tailored suits sitting in New York, passionately arguing over the security of critical minerals in Central Africa.
While reading their speeches off iPads powered by those exact same minerals.
Yes, it is deeply ironic, but it highlights how intertwined the global economy is with localized conflict.
It really does. But right alongside this high-tech pivot, the reports mention a very poignant event that happened in New York during this exact same week, the passing of Nicholas Fink Haysom.
Oh, yeah. For those who don't know, he was an absolute giant of traditional diplomacy, a former head of the UN mission in South Sudan, a South African lawyer, and an anti-apartheid activist who worked closely with Nelson Mandela.
Haysom really represented the foundational normative era of human rights and peacekeeping. His entire career was built on the idea of moral consensus, international legal frameworks, and physical human mediation. You sit leaders down in a room, you find leverage, and you negotiate a physical ceasefire.
So what does this all mean? I mean, really think about the profound tension of this specific moment in time we are looking at. We are mourning the loss of a giant of traditional boots-on-the-ground, human-to-human mediation like Nicholas Haysom, right at the exact moment the Security Council is being forced to pivot its agenda to debates on artificial intelligence, critical minerals, and GPS drone spoofing.
Quite a contrast.
Can a legacy institution, built essentially in the middle of the 20th century for state-on-state conflicts, actually keep up with these rapidly accelerating, decentralized 21st century threats?
It is the defining existential struggle of the United Nations today. The institution was fundamentally designed for bilateral negotiations between recognized governments with clear borders.
And now?
Now it has to figure out how to regulate fragmented non-state actors who are fighting with cheap commercial drones, and how to manage cognitive disinformation campaigns launched by anonymous, untraceable algorithms.
Which really is impossible.
Well, the machinery of international diplomacy is designed to move slowly in order to build consensus. But technology and the weaponization of that technology moves at an exponential rate. The widening gap between those two speeds is exactly where global instability thrives.
It really makes you look at the world differently. We've covered a massive amount of ground today for you. We started with the tragic physical realities detailed in the AI's PSPIA Week 13 report, the heartbreaking loss of peacekeepers targeted in Lebanon and Sudan.
Right.
We moved to the DRC to see how the democratization of warfare is filling the skies with drones and blinding peacekeepers with jammed signals. We looked at the 25-year evolution of the Women, Peace, and Security agenda, exploring how warfare, moving into asymmetrical and digital spaces, is disproportionately harming civilians.
And how women are fighting back against both physical starvation and digital repression.
Exactly. And we traced all of that up to the highest levels of the Security Council, watching a legacy institution scramble to adjust its focus, realizing that the new weapons of war are critical minerals and information itself.
And if you are wondering why all this high-level UN policy and military tech matters to you sitting right where you are, well, it's because the front lines are no longer distant.
They aren't just solid lines on a map anymore.
No, they are deeply interconnected with our daily lives. The critical minerals being fought over by rebel groups in Central Africa are powering the smartphones sitting in your pocket right now.
And the AI algorithms being tested in cognitive warfare campaigns to destabilize peacekeeping missions are the exact same underlying technologies shaping the news feed you scroll through every morning.
The pixels on the map are bleeding directly into our reality. The barrier between a conflict over there and the technology right here has completely dissolved. We are all participants in the information environment now.
We really are. Which brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with, building on this wild idea of cognitive warfare. If the future of conflict relies so heavily on weaponizing public perception through AI-generated misinformation and deepfakes, maybe the next major UN deployment won't require deploying soldiers in blue helmets at all. If wars are now increasingly being fought in our social media feeds and our search results, will the UN eventually need to deploy digital peacekeepers directly into our algorithms?
Now that is a truly fascinating proposition to consider.
Right. What would an algorithm programmed purely for peace and de-escalation actually look like? How do you code an AI to build human consensus instead of human outrage?
That's the multi-billion dollar question.
Something for you to think about the next time you scroll through your feed. Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us into these sources. We will catch you on the next one.